We are in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, to be truthful. We will get to 12, hopefully, this morning. If I don't dawdle too long. As I was preparing for this lesson, and I posted this on Facebook, really any philosophy in the world can stand the scrutiny of a sunny day. You know, you can believe whatever you want to believe, and if everything is going well, great. Okay, you go, my philosophy is a good philosophy. But when your son has a heart condition and your friend dies suddenly, you go, whoa. Does my philosophy bear up? Does my worldview bear up? Does the foundation on which I stand bear up? These things happen. We know they will come. When we went through chapter 7 just a few months ago and said, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind. The living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. We can sit here and we can cover it academically here. But when you go through it, you know, this is true and this is good. We had the joy and the sorrow of going through that this week. And you, too, will go through this, unless the Lord takes you first, and then you will become that sorrow that those left behind will know. No man knows his time. So, what then? And really, that's kind of been our journey in Ecclesiastes. It's been 3 weeks since we met to talk about it. Went through Christmas, all the joys of Christmas and such. But the preacher in Ecclesiastes is going to go, that's meaningless. The toys are going to break. Who got them? Who got you that toy? Who got you that blouse or that jacket? You're not going to remember. Unless it's really, really a rare treasure. That really rare and unique gift, it's going to be gone. Trying to grasp and find meaning in the things of the world, in life under the sun, is going to prove fruitless. And there is no content. But only when we look to the giver of all things. The gift and the giver. John Piper calls God not only the giver, but he is the gift. He gives himself to us. He gives himself as the greatest gift. When we understand that, when we live our lives in the sun, S-O-N, with our heads up, then all of these, we can enjoy these things. We can enjoy coffee and a banana and a donut. And we can enjoy the fellowship and enjoy the relationships. And we can love. We can love sacrificially. We can pour these things out knowing it's not a waste. Because God gives all of our purpose and all of our deeds meaning. There is great meaning, and we are coming really rapidly to the crescendo of Ecclesiastes at the end of chapter 12. I mean, there's just a sweet exclamation point. But between now and then, there's still some dark woods we're going to go through. So it was 3 weeks ago, really 3 weeks ago, that we met. We were in chapter 11, casting our bread upon the waters in the morning, verse 6, sow your seed at the evening, withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. And so we looked at stewardship. Of what things are you a steward? What's a steward? I mean, Christians use stewardship and stewards a lot, but nobody uses steward anymore unless you're going on a cruise. And then there's the
servant. Oh, one of those.
He's a servant. What's another term?
Caretaker,
manager. Okay, so a steward is somebody who manages somebody else's stuff. Really, it ain't your stuff. If you are a steward, you are being a steward of somebody else's stuff. Well, first of all, whose stuff is it? It is the Lord's. What do you have that is not the Lord's? Do you really believe that? Yeah, thank you. You know, I hope we do. I hope we do. And it may be something that we need to remind ourselves over and over and over again. We are merely stewards of everything. Name some things specifically, perhaps that others, maybe not ourselves, might have difficulty stewarding.
Our children.
Okay, our children. Why is it difficult to steward our children?
In today's society, we put our children before our spouse. I mean, they're the most important thing. Our whole life focuses on them.
We possess our kids.
And especially as a mother, you think, like, you came from me. Like, you clearly belong to me.
This is my trophy, my meaning, my everything is wrapped up in my kids. No! You are a steward. They are going to leave. They are going to leave. And we haven't had this, but others have. And this is perhaps one of the greatest pains I can imagine is to have a child taken from you.
Have a what?
Child taken from you.
Oh.
Early.
At any time.
You know, it's in. That the chances are reasonable that somebody in this room is going to have to endure that if they haven't already. And we're stewards. And we say with Job, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. They weren't mine to begin with. You know, when my children leave home, am I going to be devastated and ravaged? You know, will I have nothing? My meaning is all gone. Or, you know, will I rejoice and continue to press on? Children, what else? What's another thing that people might have difficulty stewarding?
Time.
Okay. It's not your time. It's not me time. It's his time. How much of it?
All of it.
So when you start to covet your time, that doesn't mean don't relax, don't recreate, but when that becomes your need, your mandate, your necessity, then we maybe have this skewed a little bit. What else?
Responsibility.
What can be a struggle?
Responsibility.
Well, you have a responsibility for your children. You have a responsibility for your time. You have a responsibility for your J-O-B, job.
Everything.
Money. Okay, you are a steward of money. You are a steward of the money God has given you. Well, I earned it. You earned it because he gave you strength in your limbs. And he gave you that job, by the way. Well, maybe I built it from scratch. Maybe I'm an entrepreneur and none of us. Maybe somebody in the future is going to build a business. No, he gave you the idea, the wisdom, the insight, the strength. It's all God. It's all God. And so, You know, we are stewards, and God calls us to be wise stewards. He calls us to invest well. We looked at investment, to invest wisely and diversely, but we also looked at giving. So we invest our resources, we invest the resources He has given us, and part of that investment is to give, to have an open hand. We are stewards of the stuff God has given to us, and so there may be needy around us, and it may be us. This is where, you know, we need to strip down our pride, our willful, stubborn pride. I don't need your help. I don't need your help. I don't need anybody else's help. I can do it myself. Okay, and that's just sinful pride. And it's a hard thing to go, I need help. I need money. I need someone to come and do this for me because I can't do it myself. We're going to see that as we get in deep into chapter 12. Ah, with age, I can't do it myself anymore. Oh. So, as believers, God calls us to be managers and stewards of all of His things, investing it wisely and giving to those in need. And so that was 3 weeks ago. There we press on, really, in verse 7, kind of picking up our lesson here today, with a peculiar little verse. Somebody read verse 7.
Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun.
Yeah, oh, okay. Especially if you live in Seattle. You know, sometimes around here, the clouds cover over for a long time, and then all of a sudden, boom, the light breaks through. It's a crystal blue sky day. I was like, Metaphorically, what's he driving at here? In light of all of this under the sun, We will get to the joy of life, but
to enjoy where you are.
Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. He's been talking about life under the sun. It is pleasant to see the sun. It is pleasant to get your head off of this plane here and get your head up. Again, metaphorically. Now literally, light is awesome. Anybody ever play with a prism?
Well, without it, you can't see nothing.
Okay, you can't.
Yes, it has a spectrum of colors.
Yes, I see that with my glasses. I got blue on the top and red on the bottom of everything. You know, I don't know if it's just these glasses or other glasses, but all my lights now, blue on the top, red on the bottom. It automatic, almost an automatic prism. Yeah. Is light a wave or a particle?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it is. It is. You know, sometimes it acts like this, and sometimes, you know, you can bend light. You can refract, bounce light. Sometimes I don't know. It's awesome though. Light is awesome. I hope some of you had the opportunity to go out and look at the Christmas lights when they're out. It's like, awesome, amazing things you can do with light. Light shows lights, and so really. Again, light is wonderful in a literal sense, but in a figurative sense, to get our eyes out of under the clouds and to focus on the living God, therein you will find sweetness. Again, therein is our perspective adjustment. If I start getting grumpy and possessed, I'm coveting to stop and behold the living God, to meditate upon Him and His Word, to see His glory expounded on in the prophets, to see His glory in the Son, in the Gospels, is sweet. And it is perspective. He is our gift. I was reading in Genesis, and God promises Abraham that Isaac will be his child, and God says, and I will be his God. You don't need any more. Do you believe that? Do I believe that? He is my God. What can man do to me? Light is sweet. So, if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But, why does he throw that in there? But, let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. So, rejoice in your years. Rejoice. Rejoice in them all. Is this a theme within Scripture?
Yes.
Yes. I can think of two times specifically where Paul says to the Philippians and to the Thessalonians, rejoice. Rejoice when?
Always.
And in Philippians he goes, in case you missed it the first time, again I say, rejoice. Rejoice. To have joy in your heart. I mean, we know this is, preaching to the choir. We know that we will sorrow, and sorrow is okay. Grief is okay. Mourning, periods of mourning. Not moments of mourning, but periods of mourning are okay. Can you rejoice and mourn at the same time? Yes. Yes. And, it's not something I long for, but in truth, some of the sweetest experiences I have had with the living God is in grief, rejoicing in His presence, knowing that He is with me. To perhaps be convulsive in my sobs and to know He is with me. And to rejoice in that. I'll say it in a manner under the sun. Why does he spoil the verse and go, but let him remember? It's like Eeyore. Oh, it's going to rain someday. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. Why does he crush my soul with that?
I don't think that it does crush your soul. I think that if the Bible only talked about all the good things, then we wonder what we're doing wrong. To say, Paul was a good Christian, and so nothing, he never talked about the bad things happening to him. It comforts you to know that, it's coming. And if it's not happening now, that's great, but it's going to happen again. You said it once, that you're always either getting ready to go into a trial, in a trial, or coming out of a trial.
Yeah.
It gets rid of that
want to be.
Mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing befalls us that hasn't befallen somebody else. There's nothing new under the sun. And Paul says that same thing in 1 Corinthians 10. Nothing has come to you except that which is common to man. I mean, in our youth, we go, oh, I'm the first one ever to experience this. You know, my parents don't understand me. All of us older folks were there. I mean, we were there, so we can go, yeah, we know that. That happens. Yes, you are a unique individual, but there's nothing new under the sun. The experience is unique to each of us as it comes to each of us, but what has happened to you has happened to somebody else, maybe in a slightly different manner. So we're to expect it. We know this, but we can still rejoice. And this is a huge perspective because some people live with, you know, they're constantly flinching. Their life is anxiety. And they don't enjoy the things around them because they are so worried about, name it. Well, what if my son goes to Philadelphia to get a job? I won't be able. No, you won't be able to. Sorry, you know he's away. He's gone. He's grown. Rejoice. And understand, things happen. They may happen to you. It's just it's a sobriety. It is to keep us sober as we rejoice, so that we're not startled, not surprised. It's a good thing. Somebody read verses 9 and 10 for me, please.
Rejoice, O man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. For youth and the dawn of life are vanity.
Here comes that vanity, that vapor. Rejoice. So verse 8, he tells us to rejoice in all our days. And now he points it to the young man. You're a young man, young woman here.
It's almost like all those movies that say, follow your heart.
Okay.
But then they fail to mention the judgment of God afterwards.
Oh, good! Excellent! That is excellent! Yeah. Why does he address youth here? I'm king of the world. And you may think that, but you don't know that there's an iceberg, you know, 75 miles up ahead that nobody's going to see. And boom, everything's going to change in an instant. In an instant. So he calls on youth to understand this as well. In your vitality, in your vigor, and in your joy, understand, because He's about to twist this. He's calling out to youth right now, and then in chapter 12, again, as it's written, no break, he then goes to look at ages swiftly coming. And I swear to you, I am still 16. You may look at me and go, no, you're not. And I see it, look in the mirror, and I go, well, no, I'm not. But I don't feel any different than I did when I was 16. In my heart and in my mind, the continuity is still there. I am still me. I am still me. And I look and I go, man, you, wow. So the days are coming. So he says, rejoice. Rejoice in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. You have God's permission to enjoy your life. You have God's permission to enjoy life. You are exhorted and encouraged to enjoy this life. Now, if you are looking for your satisfaction, your soul satisfaction in this life and in these things, you're going to be crushed, meaningless. But if with your eyes on the sun, because light is pleasant, with your eyes on the sun, God, with your eyes anchored in God, we can enjoy, truly enjoy this life. Arnold brings up a great point in the middle of verse 9 where he says, walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. And we're like, what's he saying? He's saying follow your heart. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That almost reflects on him too, because he said, I deny no pleasure from myself.
That's right.
So what that could have been is speculation, but still, what's he doing? He's following his heart and his eyes.
So he's done all this, and now he's looking to the youth, and he's saying, is he telling them to do the same thing?
I don't think so.
Okay, good. Shauna. Yes. Love God and do what you please. Now, again, all of us little Pharisees are going, you can't just say that. And I would contend, okay, yeah, you're probably right. We probably shouldn't just throw that out there because somebody is going to hear that and not comprehend the first part of it. You do not understand the magnitude of what it means to love the living God. Because if I am wrapped with God, where He is my joy, I am not going to go off-roading into the brambles of sin. I'm not. And God is going to give me a wide vista on which to run. Freely. And He's going to smile with me as I laugh and enjoy the life under the sun that He's given me. So, His exhortation to those of us with vigor still in our bodies is to walk in the ways of your heart. Why is that a good thing? Why can I go, that is good? Again, assuming the loving God is already there. Why is it a great exhortation to follow your heart? Okay, so I tell Corbin to follow your heart, I tell Olivia to follow her heart. Are they both going the same way? Why not? Why?
Why? Because God created them that way.
Yes. And so, who has given you the desires of your heart? God. He will give you the desires of your heart. Psalm 34, I believe it is. He will give you the desires of your heart. It doesn't mean necessarily He's going to give you all of your lusts, but He gives you your desires, properly ordered to Him. And He has created each of us unique and different. And He's saying, go! Do that which I have laid on your heart to do. Do it with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Do it. I have a burden for this ministry. Give it a shot. Is it going to flourish? I don't know. Who's going to make that determination whether or not it flourishes? God. All you're going to do is plant and sow and water and weed, and God's going to give the increase. And then comes the point that Arnold brought out, that, you know, it's love God and do whatever you want. Here in Ecclesiastes, it's do whatever you want, but understand that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Okay, that is not a sword. God's not sitting there with a 38-ounce Louisville Slugger ready to swing away when you, especially as a believer. There is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Is he going to weigh what we do? Is there a judgment for believers? Yes. What will be judged? Our righteousness? No, our works will. Exactly. And the idea we get from Paul's letter to the Corinthians is that the things we wasted away, wasted our time on, wasted our investments on, are going to burn away. It's going to burn up. Poof. Things that we thought perhaps were, oh, this is really great. No, it's nothing. But the things that we invested, our stewardship again, for the living God, are going to be judged, and he is going to reward us. You know, this is, I've only done my duty. I've only been a steward. Why should he reward me? He loves me. He is going to reward us for the good we have done in his name, for the beautiful things. He is going to lavish his love and appreciation on you. You are going to be doted on by the living God. As a parent of a proud child. We know that all of our deeds will be brought into judgment. And so that should weigh. That should weigh on us in all that we say and do. So he says, remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. Does somebody have different words than vexation and pain?
Anxiety and troubles of your body.
Okay, remove anxieties and troubles.
Sorrow and evil.
Sorrow and evil.
Grief.
Okay, so remove sorrow, grief, anger, anxiety from your heart and put away evil, pain, troubles from your body. Okay, we have your heart and your body. What's he talking about? Your heart and your body. Is not my heart part of my body?
Yes, but...
So what is the distinction between heart and body?
Heart could be referring to, desires.
Okay, yes, the immaterial man would be the heart. Your consciousness. Who you are, really. You can cut my arm off and I'm still Keith Pond. I'm not less Keith Pond. I'm Keith Pond minus an arm. Okay, I'm still, part of my spirit hasn't gone there. So, spirit and body, he says, essentially, put away, remove these things from both your spirit and your body. What kind of things, in truth, do we want to remove from our spirit and our body? How about from your body? What do you want to remove from your body?
Weight.
Okay.
Pain.
Illness. Pain. Pain. Is it okay to remove pain from your body?
Yes.
Yes! It's okay. Take some Motrin. Take a little wine for your stomach. You know, it's okay. Now, if you're living on morphine, because life is pain, that's not so good. Spiritually, what do I want to remove? Sin. Can that cause pain? Yes, it can. Remove these things from you. Really, God is calling you and me to be stewards of our lives. You know, I am to be a steward of your life. Quickly, the days of evil are coming. We're about to turn that corner. But he's telling you, in your youth, the dawn of your life is vanity. Why? Because blink, blink, gone. And you're 54. And your kids are grown and leaving, and you're a grandparent five times over. When did that happen? And you look ahead, and a man 10 years older than you dies. Suddenly. Your parents are gone. It is. It is. It's hard. So, essentially, he's saying, take care of yourself while you can. Take care of your body. And take care of your soul. Prepare yourselves. Prepare yourselves. Buckle up, buttercup, because chapter 12 is coming.
I didn't mean your life is depressing. That sounded really bad.
Sorry. It's okay. Young whippersnapper.
Well, at least you're not the oldest one here.
Not at all.
I'm your elder, so respectful.
I respect you. There you go. Here we go. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Notice he says, remember your Creator. Why doesn't he say, remember God? Remember your God. Why does he use Creator there? Do you think? I mean, I don't know. I don't have the mind.
I think it's more powerful. I think if somebody says, "This is the person," just like mom says, "I brought you into this world, and I can take you out."
We're his property.
Yes, that's right. He created us. Why did he create us?
For his good pleasure.
For his good pleasure. For his purposes. We are created for him. God the Father is going to gift God the Son the bride that he procured with his blood. We are God's pleasure. He brought us into this world and he will take us out. You know, that's not a threat. It's a promise. It is a good promise. It is a consequence of the fall. We know this. To live is Christ, to die is gain. Precious in the sight of God is the death of his saints. What a great verse. Precious in the sight of God is the death of his saints. So he says, Creator. Remember the Creator in the days of your youth here. While you are still young, when is it too late to plant an oak tree?
Never.
Never. Absolutely beautiful. When is it too late to plant an oak tree and enjoy it? Yeah, this is true, and this is important to understand. Everything that we do in this life is an investment. This is true of our marriages. You know, when the rocky, tumultuous days come, when the storms beat upon the oak tree of your marriage, don't uproot it. Don't cut it down. Let it bear those storms in strength, that in years to come, it will be the stronger, it will be the more beautiful. Let God prune the branches of our lives. Everything we do is an investment. You can go back to verse 10. As we steward our souls and our bodies, it is an investment for now. Yes, I did this thing. It's in the ground, but I don't see any change yet. I still get angry at stoplights. Okay, but you know, maybe it's changing. Maybe it's growing. You know, is there, does God have a little tick mark that I stand up against to see? Am I a little taller spiritually there? But everything that we do is an investment. But it's a long-term investment. We are not long-term investment people in our country. I want it now.
His kid has a kid that they get to actually enjoy the country. And sometimes I think that's kind of our spiritual, like, you feel like, man, where is the growth? But then, you know, I think of you and your grandchildren, for example.
And you may go, well, it's stupid. It's meaningless to plant an oak tree now. I'm not going to enjoy it. Oh, you selfish prig. You stinker. Do it now. Start it now. You know, we're a week into January. Oh, I didn't start reading through the Bible, so I'm not going to. Do it. Do it. Most of the Bible reading plans out there have slop in them. If they don't have slop in them, you can catch up. Give up your Netflix, your 2 hours of Netflix tonight, and just read God's Word and be awed by the God that we serve. Be in God's Word. Ah, oh, man, I have trouble.
Leviticus.
Do it. Okay, you're going to have to get through Chronicles. Yeah, the first couple of chapters of Chronicles. Numbers, I think, is harder. And Judges always just sucks my will to live right out of me. You know, it's funny that I can find such joy in Ecclesiastes, but Judges is like I just get hit by a freight train.
Because the people of Israel were so stupid.
Well, I don't know. It just reminds me so much of our culture today. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And you see, it's gross. Judges is so gross. So it's a long-term investment. The evil days come. Before the evil days come. Well, before the evil days come. And I will say I have no pleasure in them. What's he talking about, the evil days?
They're discouraging. There are times when not want to go through them. You definitely don't want to go through them or endure them.
What? He's talking about old age. Uh-huh. What things do people in our culture fear with regard to old age?
Social security.
Dependence on others.
Dependence. Uh-huh. Why might an older person be dependent on others?
They can't drive anymore.
They can't. Man, do you not see that? I mean, it's like, dude, you really shouldn't be driving anymore. You know, they're locked 12 o'clock. There's no 10 to 2 anywhere out there.
It's because they can barely see what's right in front of them.
Yes. Okay, so there's a dependence, there's a drive, you know, mobility, driving. What else do people, where else might they fear dependence?
There's a lack of independence that will happen.
It's physical, like, you know, my neighbor across the street, he's 85 now, and he's fallen several times. And I'm scared every time he walks across the street that he's going to fall.
It is humiliating.
That's not quite true. I find retirement joyful. I don't have a problem with Social Security. I have enough money coming in. I don't fear much of anything anymore. I don't fear asking for help anymore if I need it, because I can get it. It's all set up, ready to go. It's the fear of the unknown that's the problem.
But what when your independence gets...
I'm not going to worry about it.
That somebody else has to help you bathe, like that's...
I'm not going to worry about it. I already have that set up and living well. If it gets down to the point, unplug me.
Tom, that is a huge blessing that you have that confidence. But there are people who are humiliated by asking for help. My father, 6'3", rock of a man, his cancer ravaged his body, and I had to assist my father to go to the bathroom where he depended on his son. My dad died at 67, so, I mean, it wasn't like he was 98 and feeble anymore. His cancer was taken from him, and he had to lean upon me while I assisted him, and that is hard, and people fear that. Not all people fear that. That's great that you don't, but many do. Many do. Financial dependence. I squandered my money. Maybe I didn't invest well. Maybe my investments went south. Maybe I have nothing. And I'm now dependent on my children. I don't want to be a burden to them. That's what my mom always used to say. I don't want to be a burden to my children. But that's what God's Word says, that we are to care for our families. We are to care for our parents in their old age. We see Peter's mother-in-law living with him. There. That is the natural, God-ordained way of things. But people will get to the point, many will, where they go, this is a booger. I have no pleasure in this. My back, and we're going to, next week we'll open up and we'll conclude. We'll conclude Ecclesiastes next week. But we'll see all of the things that happen that are a trial. If they all come to you, it is hard. And one of those things Tom brought out is fear. Fear of the unknown. What is coming? I don't know. Because all of these things, one by one, are being taken from me. And we'll look at those in greater detail. So our exhortation now, while we have breath in our lungs and strength in our legs, is to rejoice, to enjoy, and to remember our Creator. Here, we know that tragedy will touch us all, but until then, we ought to rejoice in the life that God has given us now as we tend to the garden, really, that God has given us. Our hearts, our souls, our minds, our strength, our families, our friends, our church, our work. Difficult days are coming, and let them not beset us. Any closing thoughts?
I have a question. Yeah. On the, before the, is the Hebrew word for the...